Chapter 20. Close to panic, Willa turned away from shuffling the papers and parchments on top of Asher's desk and began to rummage through its drawers instead. He had to find something incriminating tonight. This was the fifth time he'd crept into Asher's office. He couldn't fail again. Lord Geralt was losing his patience. There'd been harsh words outside Justice Hall today after the Glossbottle hearing, and besides, the whole business was so dangerous. Nothing in the first drawer, or the second. What about the third? Just as he reached for the last drawer, he heard a pair of muffled voices. A key scraping in the office door's lock. He swallowed a shriek, snatched Lord Geralt's lightstone from the desktop and smacked it against the timber until the tiny glow extinguished. Fumbling it into his pocket, he made a dive for rat-faced Daphne's desk just as the office door swung open. Heart pounding, runneled with sweat, he wrapped his arms about his head and waited for the axe to fall. A flare of conjured glimlight splashed shadows on the carpet and lit up two pairs of passing legs. "Extraordinary discovery," the king was saying, voice hushed. "I can scarce believe Derm kept it secret. Who knows what might be in it? A cure, perhaps?" "Then keep on bloody looking for it if you reckon it so important," said Asher, stamping across the carpet to his desk. "Or go back to reading Derm's books. I told you I don't need you there. I can manage for one night on my own." "No, you can't," the king retorted. "It's too dangerous." Shuffle, shuffle, as Asher searched through the papers scattered all over his desk. "It ain't no more bloody dangerous now than it was the night before last. I survived then, I'll survive tonight. All I want from you is a way out of this. I want to come back from the weather chamber and hear you say, 'That's it, Asher. That was the last time. No more weather working for you.'" In the silence that followed, Willa stuffed his coat sleeve in his mouth to stifle a horrified cry. Asher was weather working? How could that be? The king said, very quietly, "Don't you think I want that too?" Asher's reply was swift and scathing. "Well, wantin' ain't enough, Gar. We've gone a bloody long ways past wantin'. Derm can't help us now, he's dead. It's just you. One way or another, you got to fix this, 'cause every day that goes by with you pretending to be king and me pissing blood to make it rain and snow is one more day someone could find out the truth. How many bloody times do you need to hear it? I can't do this much longer." Willa was afraid they'd hear his heartbeat, pounding in his chest like a madman's hammer. Derm was dead? When? How? Don't say Asher had killed him. "I promise," the king said after a long and tension-filled pause. "You won't have to. I know as well as you this has to stop." The sound of Asher's palms slapping timber was so loud, so unexpected, Willa almost hit his head on the underside of Daphne's desk.
"Are you sure you left the new weather schedule in here?"
"I put it on your desk myself," said the king. "Let me look." More slithery sounds of paper and parchment shuffling. "Here it is. You buried it under your notes for Glossbottle's hearing."
"No, I didn't. I ain't been..." "Oh, never mind," said Asher, and Willa let out a sigh of silent fright. "Bloody Darren probably snuck in here snooping while Daphne's back was turned. Now you're sure you got this right? I ain't going to send snow where there should be rain, and ice where there ought to be snow."
"It's right," the king said. "I may have lost my magic, but I can still read and count." For a moment, Willa thought he might faint dead away. King Gar had lost his magic? "Glad to hear it," said Asher. "Now you get back to your books, and I'll take care of this." "All right, then," said the king, reluctant. "But for Baal's sake, be careful. Don't overtax yourself. and make sure you drink Nix's potion after.
Nag, 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 said Asher nastily. Oh, he was such a nasty man.
There came the sound of parchment rolling, two pairs of booted feet leaving. Willa held his breath until the door clicked closed behind them and Asher's key scraped again in the lock. Alone again and undiscovered, he stayed under Daphne's desk and shook so hard he thought his teeth would shatter like glass. Derm dead, the king unmagicked, and Asher of Resthaven a criminal. The man who just that very morning had stood up in Justice Hall and dared to lecture on the welfare of the kingdom, the sanctity of Baal's great laws. He was weatherworking. Even more incredible, he was doing it with King Gar's knowledge, his blessing even. How could that be? Gar wasn't evil. There was only one explanation. Asher must have bewitched him somehow, ensorcelled him into doing his wicked bidding, perhaps even stolen his magic in the first place. Monstrous! Monstrous! And then horror slowly gave way to a dawning joy. How this had all happened was no longer important. It had happened, and that was more than enough.
Praise Baal! He wept in silent ecstasy. Praise Baal and all her mighty works! My prayers at last are answered!
Then, unexpected, within his transcendent triumph, chimed a thin, sharp note of fear. When the kingdom learned all he knew, when Asher's perfidy and the king's blind, foolish faith were revealed, there would be chaos. The uproar following Timon's spake would be nothing, nothing to the crisis brewing now. It was inevitable. All Olkin would in some way, large or small, pay for Asher's crime, even though they were innocent, even though this wasn't their fault. Imagining it, he felt his courage falter. He held their lives in the palm of his hand. Would be, once he told Lord Geralt of this discovery, the immediate cause of their unjust suffering. People would know it, and blame him. He swallowed more tears. Oh, how unfair! How unfair! One more crime to lay at Asher's feet. And yet, he had no choice. He had to speak. For the good of the kingdom, he could not stay silent. Asher must not escape punishment. The king must be freed from his pernicious, evil influence, no matter the cost. No matter that poor Willa, Baal's blameless instrument, would yet carry some of the blame. History would redeem him. In time, he'd be seen as a hero, a champion for right and justice. That's what I am, Baal. I'm your champion. When he judged enough time had passed, he unlocked the office door with Lord Geralt's magic key, crept unseen from the tower, and made his way towards the weather chamber. He didn't want to report this momentous news to Lord Geralt until he'd witnessed with his own eyes the filthy, stinking depths of Asher's crime. He got lost twice. Royal staff knew in theory where the chamber was located, but none had cause to visit it. Snow began to fall just after his second wrong turning. When at last he stumbled onto the right pathway, he was cold, wet, and out of breath. His pantaloons were torn, and his left hand was scraped to blood from when he'd tripped over a tree root and gone ungainly sprawling. The weather chamber was awe-inspiring. Terrifying. It was a wonder Asher dared stain it with his shadow, let alone defile it with his presence. A strange glow flickered at its very top, flashes of blue and silver, white and scarlet. Willa crept closer, jumping at every whisper in the grass, every creaking in the trees. The mournful hoot of a low-flying owl nearly made him piss his pants. Hot-faced, gasping, he fell against the chamber's door. He almost couldn't hear over the pounding of blood in his head. To his surprise, it was unlocked. He felt his lip curl. Sunk deep in arrogance, Asher thought himself inviolate, undiscoverable. He couldn't wait for the look on the bastard's face when he realized how wrong he'd been. He entered the chamber. Not daring to use the lightstone, he fumbled his way up the stairs in the dark, stubbing his toes and chewing his lip to stop himself from crying out at the pain. There were tight iron bands clamped about his chest. He was going to have a seizure. His legs were about to burst into flame. Just as he thought he really would die, the endless stairs came to an end, and he was outside the weather chamber itself. The door was open, the merest sliver. Through the hairline crack, he could see a fierce, bright light and hear strange and horrible sounds. Someone was screaming, a garbled gobbling of extreme distress, and buried within was a string of unintelligible words. Willa felt the hair stand up on the back of his neck. As he stood there dithering, the screaming rose to a ragged crescendo and abruptly stopped, as though cut with a knife. A moment later came the thud of a body hitting the floor. Trembling, hardly breathing, he pushed wide the door and looked his fill. An austere room papered with complicated charts and diagrams, shelves crammed with ancient books. In its middle, a miraculous thing, a model of the kingdom, and above it, tiny clouds twinkling snowflakes. Unmoving beside it, Asher, smeared and dribbled with blood. Dead then? Please not, please not, for he must live to face his crimes, to kneel at the feet of his vanquishing foe, to be stripped naked before all the city, the kingdom, and seen for the monster he was, knowing full well who'd unmasked him. He crept closer. Asher was breathing, shallowly, groaningly, with lines of pain cut deep in his flesh. Blood caked his eyelashes, clogged his nostrils, glistened redly on his lips. He was deeply, gloriously, insensible. Stealthily, Willa withdrew, used Lord Geralt's charm to lock the door behind him, and used it again on the door at the foot of the staircase. And then he ran.
"Conroyd! Conroyd, wake up, dear! Wake up!"
Morg opened his eyes. "Who?" Oh yes, his gormless, wittering wife. At least for now. "Aetean?"
"Oh, Conroyd," she said, querulous and pouting. "There is a dreadful little Olkin downstairs, and he won't go away no matter what I say. He insists you must see him, and he won't leave the premises till you do."
Morg stretched, revelling in the oiled ease of his glorious new body. "Did he give you his name?"
"Willem, or Walton, or something beginning with W," said Aetean, still pouting. "Do make him go away, Conroyd, please. It's the middle of the night, and he really is quite awful."
Morg flung back the blankets.
"Willa?"
"Yes, that's it. Willa. What in Baal's name have you to do with such a—"
He leaped out of bed, cursing.
"Be silent, you ridiculous old hag!"
And ignored her gobbling shock as he flung on Geralt's dressing gown and hurried from the room. Willa waited in the foyer, dishevelled and bloodied and muddied and gross.
"My lord!"
he cried, and scuttled across the carpet to meet him at the foot of the stairs.
"Oh, my lord! The Master Magician is dead, and...
Morg seized him by the shoulders and shook him. And what, man? Is it Asher? Tell me quickly, is it Asher? The fat little Ulkin's eyes were shining like stars.
Oh, my lord, yes, it's Asher. At last, sir, at last. Lord Geralt, we have him.
This is the end of the CD. The audiobook continues on the next CD.
Part 3, Chapter 21. Pelin Oryk sighed and took another thoughtful sip of tea. Beyond the window of his guardhouse office, silent snow continued to drift through the air and settle on the sill, the garden, the gateposts in the street. The glow of glimfire from the city street lamps turned white to gold, a constant reminder of magic. Deep silence surrounded him. The guardhouse cells downstairs were free of guests, for the moment, and the lads on night call were sleeping peacefully in their cots. Business as usual, now that the city had emptied of mourners and life was slowly falling into its new rhythms. Gar on the throne. Asher, the Ulkin administrator. The thought of Asher tipped his mouth into a smile. Outrageous. The man was outrageous. Today, no, yesterday's performance in Justice Hall would be gossip fodder for weeks, months. He'd thought Guildmeister Roddle would drop dead of a seizure on the spot. He'd nearly had a seizure himself from trying not to laugh out loud. Reprobate Asher had climbed onto the lawgiver's chair, the chair that had cradled royal law-giving rumps for years. But then that was Asher all over, wasn't it? Always climbing onto things. Yes, and over them too. Benches, tables, obstacles, restrictions, traditions. Shredding pomp and consequence with all the finesse of a cheese grater. A silent convulsion of laughter shook his bones. Indigo Glossbottle's name would live on for generations now. Asher had seen to that. So much authority resting on those broad and brawny shoulders. If it had been anybody else standing on that lawgiver's chair, he knew he'd not be laughing, but worried. Power like that could turn a man's head more easily than the lilting walk of a pretty girl passing by. But not Asher's. If ever he'd met a man entirely unimpressed with the trappings of power, it was Asher. Sparks spat in the fireplace as a log broke apart, crumbling into coals and ash. The room was warmed with magic, of course, but he still kept a fire burning through winter. Most people did. Even the Doranan loved the sound and smell of fresh-burning pity pine. The romance of leaping flames. Oryk stifled a yawn. Middle of the night, he should be sleeping, but paperwork couldn't tell the time, and he'd let it lapse of late. Extraordinary. He was a man of strict and proper procedure. He couldn't remember the last time he'd left this office without the daily report being finished and filed for future reference. And here he was with a full week's worth of reports undone. It wouldn't do. Sound and movement in the street below his window caught his attention. The hollow clopping of hooves on cobbles. A carriage, drawing to a halt at the guardhouse gates. Two cloaked figures alighting. Pelin Oryk put down his pen and went to investigate. "Lord Geralt," he said, betrayed into showing surprise. He stood back from the guardhouse front door. "Please, my lord. Enter." The King's Privy Councillor was attended by Willa Driscoll, from the Tower, the Palace, wherever it was he worked these days. A blameless man, but not well-liked. Unpopularity wasn't a crime, though, so the guard had no cause to know him. Oryk nodded politely and closed the door behind them.
"Your office," said Lord Geralt, stripping off his gloves. "Now."
Such a chilly man. Oryk bowed. taking no offence. It was pointless. My lord? With a quelling look at young Piper, on overnight front desk duty and struggling not to gape, he led his visitors upstairs. Geralt refused the chair that was offered him. Willer almost accepted, caught the lord's cold eye and changed his mind. Auric, not inclined to be intimidated in his own office, took his chair behind the desk and sat back, observing.
"Tell him," said Geralt,
slapping his gloves across one palm as though his flesh offended him.
"All of it."
"Yes, my lord," Driscoll said,
and planted his fists on the desktop. There was something eager, lascivious, in the way his eyes were shining, something predatory. Disliking him, Auric stared at the encroaching hands till the fat little man withdrew them and stood back.
"Tell me what?"
"Captain Auric, you must arrest Asher of Resthaven at once. He has broken Baal's first law and attempted magic."
He laughed.
"Asher has? Are you mad?" "Tell him," said Lord Geralt grindingly.
He listened in growing disbelief as Driscoll spewed forth a tale as horrifying as it was unlikely.
"I don't believe it," he said at last, once the man was done with his litany of accusations.
"I do," said Lord Geralt.
Auric shook his head. There was a hot buzzing in his ears, and his eyes were fogged with shock.
"But Olcan can't do magic."
He turned to Willa.
"You saw him call the snow."
"I saw the snow falling and went into the weather chamber. He was alone, unconscious, on the floor and covered in blood. And I heard him and the king talking about weather working."
"I told you," whined Driscoll. "Asher's a criminal and he has to die."
Feeling sick, Auric ignored that.
"How were you in a position to overhear anything of a private nature discussed between Asher and His Majesty?"
"That is not your concern," said Lord Geralt.
He stood.
"Forgive me, but it is. These are grave accusations. I won't proceed against Asher on nothing but the word of a man who, if I may be blunt, appears to have a personal stake in his downfall."
"You will proceed, Captain," snapped Geralt, "or find yourself relieved of duty. Master Magician Derm is dead, and you are questioning the orders of his successor."
Geralt's eyes were frightening. Pale, pale blue and colder than any winter ever called. Flickering in the depths, a scarlet thread. Or was that just his imagination? Auric didn't know. It took every skerrick of strength in him to not cower beneath that burning stare.
"Dead, my lord? I had not heard so."
"The news is not yet public. You will consider it privy and not to be repeated."
"Of course." "My lord, His Majesty trusts Asher implicitly," he said, still fighting, even though he knew he was lost. "What Driscoll suggests is madness. And as for this nonsense about magic, even if it were possible, which it isn't, to say that Asher would so imperil himself, this kingdom?"
Lord Geralt smiled.
"You speak most eloquently in his defence, Captain. Should I be questioning your loyalty?"
He felt his face bleach white.
"I am as true a subject as ever lived."
"Really? I always felt you accepted the explanation for the late king and his family's unfortunate deaths somewhat readily, Auric," said Geralt. "Perhaps that is a matter which in due course would pay further investigation."
"My lord, I protest. I do my duty without fear or favour."
Smile vanished. Geralt's eyes were deadly.
"Indeed? Then rouse your men, Captain, and tell them nothing of magic. That information you may regard as secret, on pain of death. Am I understood?"
"Yes, my lord," he said. His mouth was dry.
"You and your officers will accompany me to the weather chamber. Then we'll see how willing you are to yoke your future to Asher's short,
bloody and painful one.
He was captain of the city guard. He had no choice. He bowed.
My lord,
he said, and went to wake his men.
Tossing restlessly on the hard floor of the weather chamber, shot through with sizzling sparks of pain, Asha dreamed. Sick and dying in her bed, Ma holds out her arms to him. Thin white arms, which once had been so plump and brown.
Give me a hug now, Asha, and promise you'll be a big strong boy once I'm gone,
she says in a foam-thin voice, which only a month before had been as strong as the ocean itself.
Your dad's going to need his little man soon, and I know you won't do nought to fratch or disappoint him, will you? You'll never let him down.
He cries. Oh, how he cries. As they lay her in the cold, salty ground and sing the farewell above her head. Standing at the graveside in his best brown homespun shirt and trousers that Ma made, he can't believe the sun is shining and the sky is so blue as her favourite blouse that only last night Zeth cut up into pieces to grease the hinges on the fish trap in his boat. How can the sun be shining on such a terrible day? As he weeps, dark clouds race in from all directions, tumbling and tearing and clogging the sky until all the light is gone, the bright yellow light, and it begins to rain.
What be you doing, Asha?
His brothers angrily shout.
You ain't supposed to make it rain. We'll have to give you a damn good straighten if you think it be your business to make it rain, and no good oaken fisherman like yourself.
And Zeth undoes his copper-studded belt, slides it free of his narrow waist and cracks it double against his leathery palm. In his eyes, such a yearning for blood.
Stay clear of me, Zeth, he says, backing away. Da, don't let him! Don't let him, Da!
But Da's not listening. Da's on the ground with a heavy great mast across him, split in two, and the rain's washing all the blood out of him. All Da's blood is running into the grass, onto the grave, soaking away to be with Ma. The rain falls harder, bits of ice in it now. The clouds have turned as black as pitch and purple like bruises, and there's thunder, thunder, boom, boom, boom. Asha woke, gasping, to the hollow echoing tread of feet on the stairs leading up to the weather chamber. Mazed with dreaming, with woken pains both old and new, he was only halfway to his feet when the door burst wide and Willa gabbled in, pointing. At his heels were Pellin Auric and Conroy Geralt.
See, see, I told you he was here. Now will you believe me?
Pellin's face was bloodless, his eyes narrow with pain. A truncheon hung from his belt.
Asher, what are you doing here?
Don't tell me this repulsive little popinjay was right.
A terrible wave of anger and despair crashed over him, and he took a wild step forward, fists clenched.
You fool, Willa! You farting bloody fool! You've gone and ruined everything!
Willa was grinning like a numbskull, dancing on the balls of his ugly flat feet.
Not ruined, saved! I've saved the kingdom and soon everyone will know it, he crowed. There are guards downstairs with chains and rope to bind you hand and foot. It's over, Asha. You're done with.
Asha leaped on him.
You sinking idiot,
he shouted, pummeling and kicking and clawing in fury.
You slime-ridden, shit-eating, gnulling, putrid sea-slug, you!
Pellin stepped forward and clubbed him on the head. Still fragile and vulnerable from the weather magic, he was brought to his knees by the blow, retching.
"Don't believe him, Pellin,"
he choked, red pain rolling through him.
"You know me. I ain't a criminal or a traitor."
A face carved from ice would look warmer. "How can I not believe, Asher? You're inside the weather chamber, where you ought not to be," he groaned.
"Send for the king. He'll explain everything. He'll..." "What are you doing here?"
He was so afraid he wanted to vomit.
"I ain't saying," he whispered. "I want to see Gar."
Pellin's eyes were devoid of hope or pity. "Asher of Resthaven, in the name of our king and by the authority granted me as captain of this city, I arrest you for the capital crime of breaking Barl's first law."
"Well done, captain," said Conroy Geralt, and let one smoothly gloved hand fall on Pellin's shoulder.
Beside him, Willa still danced his little victory jig, shining like a greedy child on Grand Barl's Day morning.
"I can see I need doubt your loyalty no longer. Now call up your men and make sure this traitor's bound fast. There are many questions to be asked and answered."
They locked him in the same cage as Timon Spake had occupied in the hours before his death. When one ignorant Asher of Resthaven had blithely said, "Chop off the bastard's head," he swallowed back laughter and tears.
"I wanted nought but a boat and the ocean and an open sunlit sky."
Gar's answer, echoing, taunted him from a distance of days that felt like years now. "Not every man gets what he wants, Asher. Most men just get what they're given." Again, the threat of morbid amusement.
"Fine. So can I give it back?"
Stifling a groan, he tried to ignore his body's insistent pains. The guards had ripped off the gag and choking hempen noose they'd thought was needed to get him here from the weather chamber, but had left his arms tied to breaking point behind his back. His elbows thrummed, his wrists stung, his swollen hands throbbed, and his shoulder sockets burned. His mouth tasted like ashes and dried blood. His head ached, and his ear, where Pellin's truncheon had clubbed him. He was desperate to sit, but they'd taken away the bench and straw that Timon Spake had enjoyed, and the floor held no attraction. Even through his booted feet he could feel the flagstone's chill. Even more desperate was his need for a pot. His bladder was full to bursting, but even if they'd left him one, he couldn't unbutton his trousers. So when he couldn't hold it any longer, he just let go. The hot piss running down the inside of his right leg was the only warm thing in the place. That and the shame that burned him like coals. Shame, but not fear. He refused to be afraid. Gar had promised he'd be protected, and Gar was the king. Time passed. He wondered why his release was taking so long. Surely they'd wake Gar for this, even if it was still dark outside. Was it still dark outside? He couldn't tell. When the outer cell door finally opened, it was to admit Conroy Geralt, with Pellin behind him. Asher straightened.
"Where's His Majesty?"
"Snoring sweetly in his bed, I presume," said Geralt.
"You ain't told him?"
He turned to Pellin.
"You got to tell him, Pellin. You..."
"Captain Auric."
"What?"
Pellin's expression was rigid.
"You will address me as Captain Auric."
He took a moment to breathe slowly, carefully, to subdue fear. "All right, Captain Auric. I know how this looks, but I swear if you rouse the king and ask him to come, he'll explain."
"It's your explanation we're interested in," said Auric.
"Your presence in the weather chamber is a capital crime, punishable by death. Attempting to implicate His Majesty will not save you.
I got nothing to say. Not till you get Gar down here.
With a gentle sigh, Geralt stepped forward.
You may leave us, Captain. I require private conversation with the prisoner.
Auric shook his head. No, my lord. He's in my charge and is my responsibility. Traitor or not, he has certain rights. I must stand witness.
Geralt's face spasmed with rage.
Need I again remind you, Captain, that I am...
With due respect, the Master Magician has no jurisdiction over criminal investigation, said Auric, unflinching. Only sentencing, once guilt is established.
Asha stared. Master Magician? Since when?
You're getting ahead of yourself, Geralt. Durm ain't even cold yet, and Gar...
Silence!
Hissed Geralt. He glared at Auric.
Captain, I commend your diligence, but we deal with matters beyond mere law-breaking. This business strikes at the very heart of our kingdom and touches upon questions of magic which are of no concern to you.
Auric hesitated. Asher, fear flaring, pressed his face to the prison's bars.
Don't go, Pellin. Captain Auric, don't leave me alone with him. Please.
Fear not, Captain, said Geralt expansively. I have no intention of cheating the axeman of his fee.
Very well, my lord, said Auric. But I shall hold you to your word.
The door closed behind him. Geralt smiled. The malice in him stepped Asher back 3 paces.
I ain't saying nowt till Gar gets here.
Really?
Something deep in the Doranan Lord's eyes flared scarlet.
Pain,
he whispered, and pain cut through Asher like a scythe, doubled him over and stole his breath.
Bal rot your entrails, Geralt,
he grunted, still bent in half.
I ain't telling you nowt.
Wrong, filth, said Geralt. You'll tell me everything.
And he did, in the end. Once he'd finished screaming. He couldn't stop himself. Geralt's mind winnowed his like a grain thresher, reducing all thoughts of resistance to chaff. Eventually, emptied of words, he fainted. For the 5th time since his early arrival at the tower that morning, Darren got up from his desk and poked his head through his open office doorway, looked down, strained his hearing for any sign of his tardy assistant. But no, still no Willa. Where could the wretched man be? They had oceans of work to swim through. And then he heard the tower's front doors open and Willa's imperious voice demanding,
Berta, has Darren arrived yet? We have urgent business.
We?
As the maid replied, he caught a glimpse of Willa and the man he ushered up the staircase before him. Lord Geralt. He returned to his desk. When Willa flounced into the room on Lord Geralt's heels, he was busily reading the day's schedule. He stood and bowed.
My lord.
Then he fixed his attention on his assistant.
You are fearsome tardy this morning, sir. Might I ask where?
At the guardhouse, said Willa. Engaged on matters of state.
At my behest, added Lord Geralt. I presume you have no objection.
Matters of state? Willa? Darren bowed again.
Of course not, my lord.
He cleared his throat.
Did you require something of me? My... Asher of Resthaven is arrested, said Lord Geralt.
Anyone would think the announcement was unexciting to him, provided they weren't looking at his eyes.
Arrested? Darren said faintly. On what charge?
No charge but proven treason, said Willa. His guilt is beyond all doubt. He...
Willa, said Lord Geralt mildly.
Willa's mouth sprang shut like a mouse trap.
I must see the king.
Geralt continued. Take me to him. Darren shifted uneasily.
My lord, his majesty called Snow last night. The weatherworking taxes him. He often remains late abed the following...
Now, said Lord Geralt.
Clearly, argument was out of the question.
My lord, he said, then turned to eye Willa quellingly. I shan't be long. Kindly prepare for me the notes for today's session with...
No, said Willa. He was grinning. I don't work for you any more. I've accepted Lord Geralt's offer of a position on his staff.
You've done what?
You're a fool, Darren, Willa said spitefully. Asher took you in along with everybody else, even the king, but not me. I saw through him. I stayed loyal to Baal, and Lord Geralt knows it. You'll have to find yourself another errand boy.
His hand itched to slap the insolent smile from Willa's face. I see, he said thinly.
Congratulations. Make sure you remove any personal items from your desk before you depart.
Willa looked around the room, his gaze sticky with distaste.
There's nothing I want from here.
Then repair to my townhouse, said Lord Geralt, and await my return.
My lord,
said Willa, with an extravagant bow, and withdrew. The pompous, ungrateful little turd! Darren watched him go with ill-concealed loathing, then stepped from behind his desk.
My lord, if you would follow me.
Heart pounding, head awhirl with shock and speculation, and a burning desire to know what Asher had done, he led Lord Geralt up the spiral staircase to the door of His Majesty's suite. Gar was woken from slumber by a rough hand shaking him and a dazzling assault of sunlight.
"Stir yourself, boy," said a curt voice. "Your sins have found you out."
He sat up, incredulous.
"Conroyd? What is the meaning of this? How did you get in here?"
Outlined in sunlight, Conroy Geralt stood beside the bed, his golden head a glowing nimbus.
"Your secretary admitted me."
"Then he's dismissed! Darren, do you hear me? You're dismissed!"
He screwed up his eyes and squinted round the room.
"Where are you, you damned interfering old woman?"
"Not here," said Conroy. "What I have to say is for your ears alone."
Sliding back under his blankets, he rested a forearm across his face. It felt as though he'd fallen asleep mere moments ago. Hours and hours spent searching through Derm's borrowed books, and not even a sign of Baal's diary.
"I'm not interested. Now get out!"
When Conroy made no move, he sat up and shouted,
"Are you deaf? Your king just gave you a command! Get out!"
Conroy smiled. "Your tame Olkin is arrested and sitting in a cell, and you are called upon to clarify certain matters arising from his apprehension."
He half climbed, half fell out of bed, reached for his dressing gown and covered his nakedness.
"Arrested? On whose authority? Yours? How dare you? Free him, immediately, and then take his place in the guardhouse."
Conroyd considered him, unmoved.
"You don't ask why he's arrested. Can it be you already know?"
"Baal save them, Baal save them." "I don't care why. All that matters is you've laid hands on a fellow counselor without recourse to your king. You'd never have done this while my father was alive, and you won't do it now that he's dead."
"Asher has broken Baal's first law," said Conroyd. "Where else should he be if not in prison?"
Conroyd knew. Stunned into silence, he felt his blood turn to ice.
"Somehow he knew,"
Conroyd sneered. "You puling cripple. Did you truly think you could succeed? Against me? Did you actually believe you could deny me my destiny?
my rightful possession of this land? You're just like your father, a weakling, and a...
Don't you speak of my father!
Conroyd ignored him.
Criminal. Asher has confessed, boy. Magic has failed you, and your complicity in his crimes is beyond doubt.
Do you hear yourself, Conroyd? He said, his voice low and shaking. His empty stomach roiled, and bile burned his throat, his mouth. Asher was arrested. Your rightful possession of this land? You arrogant bastard. Father was right. Given the chance, you and your heirs would elevate the Doran into godhood and reduce the Ulkan to slaves. Is it any wonder I'd do anything, risk anything, to keep House Geralt away from the throne?
You pathetic earth-sodden worm!
Conroyd screamed in a whisper, backing him into the wall.
Are you truly this blind, this stupid? You've given an Ulkan magic, given a subhuman race of cattle power!
Let go of me, Conroyd!
Gar said as fingers twisted in the brocade of his dressing gown.
Let go and get out.
How did you do it? Who was it that helped you?
Conroyd hissed.
The filth didn't know. Was it one of my so-called friends? Is that how you did it? Did you promise Daltrey power? Or Boker? Sorvold? Hafar? Promise them riches in return for...
I promise nothing to no one!
He shouted, and wrenched himself free.
And that was an assault upon your king, so now you're the traitor!
But Conroyd wasn't listening. Motionless, the hectic colour fading from his face, comprehension dawned behind his eyes.
It was in him?
He said slowly, almost disbelieving.
The Ulkan has magic of his own?
Heart thumping, Gar pushed past him, stumbled against the corner of the bed and nearly fell.
Go home, my lord. Consider it house arrest. I will... Do nothing,
said Conroyd, and laughed.
Little crippled king, do you not understand? It is over. Your secret is revealed, your failure discovered. Asher of Resthaven is destined to die, and you are powerless to save him.
But I promised him. I promised. Fighting nausea, he made himself look into Conroyd's hateful, hating face.
Anything Asher did was because I asked it. Because he is my friend.
Conroyd smiled.
Then he is a fool, and his lack of discrimination will kill him.
Gar wondered if this was how his father had felt when the carriage hurtled over the edge of Salbert's eyrie. I'll make you a bargain, Conroyd. His voice sounded thread-thin and distant. Release Asher, and I'll give you the crown.
Conroyd laughed. The crown is mine already, boy, and all the kingdom with it. Instead of bargaining, you should get on your knees and beg.
For what? Asher's life? He dropped to the carpet. Very well, then. I beg. He winced as strong fingers, heavy with rings, imprisoned his face.
Too late, said Conroyd.
Something dreadful was burning in the man's eyes. Gar forced himself not to quail before it. Made himself meet that incendiary gaze.
If you kill him, Conroyd, I'll shout from coast to coast that the Ulkan are as magic as we. I'll destroy the lie our people have lived here these past 600 years. I'll tell the truth and let it cost me my life.
Conroyd's cruel fingers tightened to gasping point.
Breathe one word of Ulkan magic, cripple, just one, and I'll bring House Torvig down on your magicless head. By the time I'm through, history will remember your father as an ignorant, impotent, cuckolded king. And your mother? Your mother will be known as the Strumpet Queen who sullied her marriage bed with some rotting Olkin farmhand, your true father, and then foisted her blasphemous spawn upon an unsuspecting kingdom. Your house will be reviled, its crypt will be struck open, and the corpses of your family cast into the wilderness. And your sister? I'll erase her from Dorn in memory as though precious, precocious Fane never lived. When I am done with it, all that will remain of House Torvig is the cuckold, the strumpet, and the half-breed cripple. Is that the legacy you want to leave, boy? Shall that be the sum of your dynastic achievements?
You wouldn't, he choked, fighting the urge to retch. You loved my mother.
Loved her? Echoed Conroyd. Your mother was a bitch, a slut, a treacherous whore.
Guts heaving, Gar knocked the grasping fingers aside and stood. I promised Asher I'd protect him. To break that oath would be to destroy House Torvig myself. So do your worst, Conroyd. But be warned, my house stands stronger than you know, and you're not as loved as you think. Conroyd's face twisted.
I could kill you, Worm, before you had the chance to open your mouth.
You could, but you won't, he retorted. Without me to endorse your succession, there will be a schism, Conroyd, with no guarantee you'd emerge victorious or even alive at the end of it. Be sensible. Spare Asher, and I'll abdicate in your favor and keep secret his use of magic. Kill him. A moment of blazing silence.
Well, 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 said Conroyd softly. So the worm has a spine.
How often must I tell you? I am my father's son. Conroyd's eyebrows lifted.
And as your father's son, how will you react, I wonder, when I declare a purge upon the Olkin?
What?
Now Conroyd was smiling. Unless you abdicate and sign a proclamation publicly condemning Asher of Resthaven to death as a criminal, a traitor, and a breaker of Baal's law, I promise he'll be but the first Olkin to die. For the sake of the kingdom, and to uphold our sacred laws, I shall launch a purge the likes of which this land has never seen. And when I'm done, if there are enough Olkin left living to fill a single village, then I'll say that I have failed.
Bludgeoned to a disbelieving silence, Gar stared at Conroyd. You're mad, he said at last. The General Council would never let you. Holes would never...
Stop deluding yourself, Conroyd said brutally. Do you think there's a Doran in breathing who wants to see an Olkin with magic? And if you think Holes would try to stop me, you've sadly mistaken the depth of his devotion to his precious Baal and her laws.
Abruptly, his legs would no longer bear his weight. Collapsing onto his bed, Gar turned his head away so Conroyd wouldn't see his despair, his defeat. Is there no human feeling in you? He whispered. Does a king's word mean nothing? Asher trusted me, trusted my promise I'd keep him safe.
Then he is twice a fool. It was a bargain you had no business making. A promise you knew full well you could never keep, didn't you?
No. No. At least, not a promise he'd thought he'd have to keep. Damn it, they'd been so careful.
The choice is a simple one, said Conroyd, relentless. Do as I say, or drown in a flood of oaken blood.
Gar made himself look at his tormentor. You'd truly do it, wouldn't you? You'd kill them all.
I have said so, said Conroyd. Do you at last believe it?
Yes, he believed it, and wondered, sickened, if his father had ever once suspected the truth of this man. the hatred and the violence that slept behind his eyes. "And what of me?" he asked dully. "What happens to me once I've signed my name to your filthy lies? A convenient accident?"
Conroy shrugged. "Not unless you lose your senses and try something unwise. You'll remain here in the tower, in seclusion, withdrawn from public life, your health sadly ruined by the loss of your family and your magic, by the betrayal of one you so stupidly trusted.
The people
won't miss you for long. The Doranan barely notice your existence before your mistaken elevation to king. And as for the Olkin,"
another disdainful shrug,
"they were never people in the first place."
Gar pressed a fist against his heart. There was a pain in him so dreadful, so deep, he thought he should die of it. He wished he could. Kill Asher, or kill a kingdom full of his innocent brethren. Whatever he decided, he'd be stained with blood forever. "Oh, sweet Baal, forgive me." "Bring me your proclamation, then," he said, and could hardly recognize his own voice. "I will sign it, and may Baal damn you, Conroyd, in this life and the next."
Chapter 22. After a sleepless night, Dathne rose with the sun, washed and dressed and ate a half-hearted breakfast, then drifted downstairs to the bookshop. Dusting shelves was a mindless antidote to worry, and anyway it needed to be done. Young Poppy, hired to run the place day to day, was perfect with customers, but seemed allergic to cleaning. There was something soothing about books. Even the newest Goetzic romance calmed her riotous nerves, made her smile. Safe amongst her silent shelves, pretending it was still her old life that she lived, she dabbed and drifted and tried not to remember the touch of snowflakes on her skin. But memory would not be denied. Asher made it snow. Her hands shook and she dropped her dusting cloth. She'd never dreamed his power would come like this. Weather magic was Doranan magic. She'd never known of an Olkin who could wield it. "Fool," she berated herself savagely, retrieving the duster. "He's the innocent mage and born of prophecy. What did you think he was, just another Olkin? Oh, Asher, Asher, if only you'd confided." Failure burned her. She'd been so sure that if she seduced his body, his mind would surely follow. She wasn't used to being wrong. "I'm Javale's heir," she whispered to a shelf crammed full of histories. "I'm in the business of being right." Clearly, the time had come to tell him, to spirit him somewhere to safety and show him to himself at last, reveal to him his destiny and purpose. Vera would know best where he could be hidden, which meant she could no longer avoid talking to the old woman. And if that meant a scolding for her silence, so be it. Decided at last, Dathne tossed aside the dusting cloth, turned for the door leading back to her apartment, and was startled by an urgent tapping on the bookshop window. It was young Fenella, Mistress Tuttle's apprentice, on her way to work at the bakery. The girl's eyes were popping wide in a pale face. She waved her hand, pointed round the corner, then disappeared from view. Frowning, Dathne unlocked the shop's back door and slipped into the tiny courtyard behind. "Yes, Finny?" The girl was on the brink of tears.
"Oh, Mistress Dathne, I saw you in there as I was passing, and I thought perhaps I should tell you. But now I don't know. I don't want to get in trouble. But you work with him, you're friends with him, and you've always been so kind to me."
"Asher." Resisting the urge to shake the wretched child, Dathne forced a smile. "It's all right, Finny. Take a deep breath and tell me what's amiss."
"Oh, Mistress Dathne," Finny whispered. "Maester Asher's been arrested."
"Arrested?"
she said sharply. "Nonsense. Where did you hear such a poppycock tale?"
Fenella shrank back.
"From my brother Deke. He was street cleaning in the alleyway opposite the guardhouse, and he saw them bring Asher in. All tied up he was, with a cloth over his face and a noose round his neck. But the cloth slipped and Deke saw him. It was awful, he said. Captain Orrick was there, and Lord Geralt too."
Arrested. And in such a skullduggery fashion. She could hardly think straight for the frantic pounding of her heart. And did they see Deke spying there? Finny coloured, indignant.
"He wasn't spying, he was doing his job. But no, he says they never saw him, 'cause he made sure to stay quiet as a mouse. Deke says a smart man who comes across that kind of business is deaf and dumb and blind."
"And yet he told you?"
"I'm always the first one up, on account of starting so early in the bakery," said Finny, shrugging. "He said he had to tell someone. He was feeling all wobbly, and he knew I'd hold my tongue. And I will, too. I'm only telling you 'cause I know you're Asher's friend."
Trembling, Daphne hugged her. "And I'm right grateful, Finny. Now off you go to Mistress Tuttle's before you get docked for lateness. And Finny, not a word about this to anyone. Promise?"
Finny nodded vigorously.
"Oh yes, I promise. Mistress Daphne, is Asher going to be all right?"
She forced a smile. "Of course he is. I'm sure it's all a terrible mistake." Reassured, Finny hurried away. Breathless with fear, Daphne contacted Vera.
"Arrested?"
the old woman repeated. The link connecting them vibrated with her shock.
"Do you know why?"
"No," said Daphne. "But Vera, he has the weather magic. I fear he's been discovered." Vera swore.
"I'm sorry," Daphne wailed. "This is all my fault. I should have told him who he was weeks ago. I should have listened to Matt. I should never have."
"We can lay blame later. Pack all that might betray you, child, and leave the city at once."
"Leave?" she said. "Vera, no. I have to save Asher. I have to..."
"You can't, child. Not on your own. And the city won't be safe for you now. Come to me, and together we'll find a way."
Smearing the tears on her cheeks with the shaking hand, Daphne nodded. "All right. Where are you?" The knowledge sped from Vera's mind to hers through the circle stone link. "The Blackwoods? You're not so far away, then."
"Far enough. Don't risk a horse for fear of attention. Cloak yourself and slip out of the city sideways. Walk as fast as you can. The Blackwoods Road is lightly travelled this time of year. If you do see someone, hide till they pass. I'll meet you on the way."
She wasn't alone. The relief was overwhelming. And then she sat up sharply, remembering.
"Matt! Vera, I have to warn Matt!"
"Leave Matthias to me. Think only of yourself, child. If you stay there much longer, the next knock on your door could be a guardsman with inconvenient questions."
Numbly, she stared into the pulsing heart of the circle stone.
"Asher will think I've abandoned him," she whispered. "He'll think I never meant a word I said."
"Maybe he will, and maybe he won't," said Vera. "That's not for you to say. Now hurry!"